Welcome to Trumped on the BBC World Service, the program where we talk about the presidency of Donald Trump, prompted by his own words in his tweets. I'm Anthony Zerker, BBC North America reporter, and I'm here in the BBC's Washington studio with my guests, Elaine Kmark, a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, and Liam Donovan, a regular contributor to the National Review and Politico magazine. Now, joining us on Skype is Adam Gingrich. He's a political analyst with Your Voice America, and he's in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, a state that was pivotal to Donald Trump's unexpected victory in last year's general election. As we record this on Friday morning, I'm reminded that it was just a year ago this week when I was in Cleveland for the Republican convention that nominated Donald Trump. Gosh, a year. Everyone was expecting a new version of Trump to come on stage. Instead, we got the same combative, stormy Trump we saw on the campaign trail. I'm not sure at the time any of us would have imagined that today, 6 months after his inauguration, President Trump would be saying this to America in a tweet. I'm asking all citizens to believe in yourselves, believe in your future, and believe once more in America. Unlike his acceptance speech, that's a positive message, but it comes at the end of a week full of negative news. Once again, Trump has found difficulty implementing a campaign pledge, repealing President Obama's health care legislation, and finding something new to replace it with. Here's one of a number of tweets which sums up the president's frustration. I will be having lunch at the White House today with Republican senators concerning health care. They must keep their promise to America. All right, Liam, first of all, I want to put a big red flag over this tweet and one particular word in this tweet. They must keep their promise to America. So Republicans, the rank and file in Congress, what do they think of being characterized as a they and not a we here by the president?
That's right. It's they and sort of breaking the third wall. It's not they. It's not us. It's speaking to the American people and talking about them. A little passive aggressive. I think that's my takeaway. I think it's pretty clear, consciously or subconsciously, that he doesn't identify himself. This isn't his problem. Mm-hmm. You could look at it two ways. Either he doesn't think of himself even still as a Republican, as this being a Republican problem. And either way, he's sort of carving out the accountability and responsibility for this problem, and send it to me. I'm ready to sign it, but this is on you guys to solve the problem.
He's distancing himself. Although after the House passed a version of the bill, he had this big rally with all the members of the House of Representatives in the White House, and then he went on and called the bill later mean to Republicans in a closed door meeting. All right, Elaine, you're taking a more liberal view of politics here. How do you read the events this week in terms of Trump's relationship with Congress?
Well, it's bad, and it started out bad, and it hasn't improved, and I don't see any way that it is going to improve. He does not have any respect for the separation of powers. Sometimes you wonder if he ever read the Constitution. And it's just that he is maybe going down to be the worst president vis-a-vis Congress that we've had in ever. Just because of the total and utter lack of respect and understanding of their role in the system.
Right. That's a bold statement, given that Andrew Jackson, I think, actually built the Treasury building so he wouldn't have to look at Congress from the White House. All right, I want to bring Adam Gingrich in on Skype here. Adam, first of all, I want to make sure you're no relation to former Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich, right?
No relation. He was adopted, by the way, but he did grow up about 8 miles away from where I grew up. So we do have a geographical similarities.
The Gingriches, where are you from? Are you from Pennsylvania?
Yeah.
The Gingriches of Pennsylvania?
Yep. Dauphin County, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
Yep. Okay. So Pennsylvania, a key state. And I want to read this tweet to you about how the president sums up politics. We were let down by all of the Democrats and a few Republicans. Most Republicans were loyal, terrific, and worked really hard. We will return. So, Adam, if you're in Trump country, I suppose, how do Trump supporters like yourself view this situation now?
Well, people need to keep this in perspective. Trump has been actually remarkably consistent on this. He said this throughout the campaign that, Congress has to get its act together on this. We've got to do this. We've got to repeal and replace. But he's also said, the alternative is this is going to collapse. The ACA is going to collapse. Mm-hmm. So essentially, the Democrats seem to be giddy over the seemingly failure of this initial proposal. But we are moving back towards a direct vote again. Mitch McConnell has stepped up and said, listen, I'm taking heat from all sides. I've got to put up something. So he's going to put up something on a motion to proceed. Clearly, it's got to be fixed. Trump has made it clear that he holds Congress responsible. I just don't understand. Frankly, I know a lot of people in Congress. I work with them. I just don't understand how you go this far 7 years and not have a realistic policy out of the gate. Right. And to be honest with you, Anthony, I mean, we keep talking about these CBO scores as if they were gospel. If the CBO is correct.
Right. That's a Congressional Budget Office that's been doing analysis of these bills.
It's not dead yet.
Right. And yeah, I think you're right. I think that you know, we counted out the House version of this bill and eventually something got passed. And you mentioned something interesting. I mean, Trump did campaign against Congress. He campaigned against the establishment. So, Liam, I mean, maybe, you know, this is just an extension of that. He's not beholden to Mitch McConnell or people in Congress. He can chart his own path here.
Well, that's been the interesting thing, I think, to watch is because the leader and the president are in the same place generally because the president doesn't care. He's sort of agnostic, and therefore he is aligned with the leader. But the posture of these individual senators has been judged differently depending on whether they're opposing from the right or the left. And at the end of the day, that's all this is about, is getting to 50 votes and sending something to the president.
Right, Elaine, we saw, you know, I mentioned that rally after the House passed a bill. I mean, that's what it's all about. Trump likes winning. He's less concerned about the policy permutations.
Right, but I think what you're seeing on the members, the members from the right and the left who are concerned about this, is there's a reality factor here. There are people who have health insurance now who won't have health insurance. And I think that all the members, Democrats or Republicans, are terrified of a backlash on that. Well, Democrats are kind of, they don't like it for the sake of the people they want to insure. On the other hand, that's political gold for them. If they pass this or they fail to pass it, it's political gold because, frankly, you're going to have lots and lots of people who had something and you're taking it away from them. And guess what? You can't do that in politics. That's why Social Security never is going away. A couple years ago, somebody asked me what the future of Medicare was, and I said the future of Medicare is exactly the same as the past of Medicare. We just don't take things away from people in democratic societies without the politicians paying a big price for it.
I mean, Adam, a lot of Donald Trump supporters, particularly in states like West Virginia and Pennsylvania, they're on Medicaid. They benefited from Medicaid as an expansion of a program that provides health insurance to the poor. I mean, they probably don't want to see this this taken away from them either, do they?
Well, as in any entitlement, I think, you know, that's the predominant thinking. You know, you don't take them away. We traditionally haven't taken them away in America very easily. But the other thing, we polled this, and when I say we, I mean the Republican Party, has polled the swing districts, the House districts. They're talking about the most vulnerable senator here in the country for our part, which is Heller out there in Nevada, who has a Republican governor who has really got behind expanded Medicaid. Here in Pennsylvania, we have two monster Republican majorities sandwiched around a liberal governor who is underwater in his popularity rating. So he's going into an election year. He absolutely does not want this touched at all because he won't be. The budget is already late because they've had such a shortfall. You can only imagine some of these states with the Medicaid expansion. Once the subsidies start to slow down, come in less, 10% less by the law, these states are going to start really feeling the pinch. Right. But however, my main point here is no matter what Republican plan gets polled, it tends to be about a quarter of the population that responds affirmatively to this. So if we don't do anything, it's not political death for Congress. The map set up in the Senate is such that they can't lose. They gain two or three seats by stumbling across the finish line. And in the House, I don't see them losing more than 10 seats in the swing districts either, particularly if they don't pass this bill. Because if you don't pass it, you don't pass it.
So they may not face a political price for not passing a bill. Okay, I want to change gears here because healthcare, while that has been the topic du jour in Washington for the past week, and has pushed the legislative timetable here into Washington's summer recess. It's not the only subject that everyone's talking about. Next week is going to be the next installment of the reality television show known as The Russia Story. The president's powerful son-in-law, Jared Kushner, is going to appear in a closed session before Congress, while his son, Donald Jr., and former campaign manager, Paul Manafort, will be publicly questioned about a meeting they had with a Russian lawyer last year before Donald Trump was nominated. That was in June 2016. And whether the Russian government was attempting to help Trump win the presidency. Here's what the president had to say about that meeting on Twitter. Most politicians would have gone to a meeting like the one Don Jr. attended in order to get info on an opponent. That's politics. So he seems to be saying, and nothing to see here, folks. Move on. Okay, Elaine, is this just another example of politics as usual, the they do it too defense? And how is that going to hold up?
No, of course not. I mean, this is a foreign power. This is a country that has done things that we don't like at all, that are not consistent with our values. This wasn't the British coming to them. This was the Russians coming to them. And frankly, even if the British had come to them, they should have said something. I think the easiest way to understand this is that during the 2000 campaign, Congressman Tom Downey was playing George Bush in the, you know, in the practice debates against Al Gore. And he received a debate book, a preparation debate book that was from the Bush campaign, which somebody had stolen and sent to him. Not only did he recuse himself from participating in debate prep, which was very disappointing to him because it was a fun thing to do, but he called the FBI. I mean, he called the FBI right away. It was clear that there was something illegal going on here. So people don't do this with foreign governments. They're happy to take opposition research in the traditional ways. But frankly, a lot of people get burned and have over the years in politics by, you know, taking information from sort of suspect sources. Now, I do think that the Trump people were, I think that his children were a little naive, okay? So I'm not sure that they are really evil on this. I think they were kind of, you know, this was new to them and they'd never played this game before. But let's face it, it is not commonly done.
Right. I mean, Liam, in a more traditional campaign, as you worked with more traditional campaigns, I mean, this would set off all sorts of alarm bells. They would look at someone approaching the campaign with these documents or promises from these documents. They would look at that pretty suspiciously and probably at the very least try to distance themselves from this.
Oh, absolutely. And this, it obviously doesn't hold water on its face, but I think the interesting thing is twofold. One, the very promise and predicate of this campaign is he's not a normal politician and he's not politics as usual. So saying that this is just politics as usual isn't a very good defense, or at least not one that fits and comports with his sort of ethos. But the other thing is, you know, they've spent 6 months saying this is, you're all crazy, none of this ever happened, it's fake news, and you've shifted to, okay, yeah, maybe it happened, but it doesn't mean anything, it's a nothing burger. Then to, well, of course he did, because this is the right thing to do, and obviously he would. So it's just, there's a fascinating sort of trajectory there, and it's played out with not just this, but every other revelation. At first it's not true, then okay, maybe it's true, but it doesn't matter. Then it was smart to do in the first place.
Right. So those of us here in Washington, our political antenna, they twitch when we get something like that, shifting stories, changing explanations. But Adam, you know, I've often seen Trump supporters shrug this sort of thing off, and the Russia story in general they view as just a way for his political opponents to try to damage him and frustrate his plans, the stuff he campaigned on. I mean, are you seeing that out in the U.S., outside of the Washington Beltway bubble?
Well, we polled it extensively. I think the major networks and the major newspapers have polled it as well, and it's single digits as far as Republican independents are concerned. They don't care. 90% of Republicans distrust the media, don't listen to them at all. Hopefully they listen to this program. But I will say that this is getting a little ridiculous. It's I agree with the assessment that the Great Britain shouldn't be interfering either, which is why it'll be very interesting to understand just how this detestable document, the Christopher Steele dossier from Fusion GPS. Fusion GPS was involved because the Democrats had their hands all over this. And it's just hypocrisy at its height. The Ukraine was very much involved in trying to dig up dirt on Paul Manafort and Donald Trump. The Democrats from Hillary's campaign actually sent over a staffer. Yeah. So
the difference is that, you know, the Democrats aren't in power right now. Donald Trump's in power. He's the president. But what I want to try to drill down in is, do you think that average Trump supporters, the type of people I've seen at Trump rallies over the campaign, the ones who came out and wore T-shirts and held up signs, do you think that the Russian story or any of this actually resonates with them at all?
Yeah, I mean, the resonation is irritation, aggravation, and they turn it around and take it out on the media. And the Congress has to deal with the fact that their ratings are really underwater to about the tune of 20%. And Republican and independent trust in the media is approaching the teens. So, if you want to say it's resonating in the opposite way. Absolutely no concern. Like I said, even the Washington Post poll indicates 9% of Republican independents think that Russia had anything to do with this election.
Right. And then you see a tweet like this from the president where he was turning his anger on his critics in the media. He tweeted, The fake news is becoming more and more dishonest. Even a dinner arranged for a top 20 leaders in Germany is made to look sinister. And that was the dinner he had where he had a chat with Putin towards the end of it. But again, he's using this as a way to bash the media and to try to frame this as the media out to get him. And it seems like, if we look at these polls, the Republican Party and Republican rank and file, they tend to believe that. Liam, I mean, the media is not exactly, a popular element among conservative circles.
You dance with the one who brung you, and that was how Trump got here in a lot of ways. He knows he can go back to this well anytime if he needs to get a boost. And it's, I don't know that it's, from a civic standpoint, probably not appropriate or something that's good for the body politic, but it's good politically for him, right. and it gins up the folks that he counts on for support.
Right, Elaine, I want to give you the last word here. And despite Donald Trump's media bashing, he did sit down with the New York Times, three reporters in the White House just the other day. I mean, he still seems to think a little bit about how the media is portraying him, right?
Look, he's obsessed with the media. Let's face it. He's absolutely, to a degree that I think is hurting his presidency. He's obsessed with it on trying to get good media. That's all he cares about. And frankly, and I wrote a whole book on this called Why Presidents Fail. Frankly, presidents get judged in the end on what they accomplish and not what they say. And so this is really, it's very detrimental to him. He's not establishing a record. He doesn't have a legacy. The first test will be those 2018 midterms, where frankly, I disagree with Adam. The party is in trouble. The Republicans are in trouble in Congress. And he needs to accomplish something. And this, he really needs to kind of straighten himself out.
All right. Well, Donald Trump is from Manhattan, and he's a part of the Manhattan, New York tabloid scene. So I could understand why he would be so focused on the media. But that's all the time we have for this week here in Washington. I want to thank my guests, Elaine Kmark, Liam Donovan, and Adam Gingrich in Pennsylvania. You've been listening to Trumped on the BBC World Service. It's an MDM production. The producer is Phil Riebel. I'm Anthony Zerker. Thank you for listening. And as usual, we leave the last word to the president. It's about health care, but the last two words are also good advice for the next edition of Trumped. As I have always said, let Obamacare fail and then come together and do a great health care plan. Stay tuned. All right, so stay tuned, everyone.